Good morning, everybody. I'm Peg Chumley, and I'm a real alcoholic.
Hi.
And when Franklin talked about that real alcoholic last night, he sent us to several passages in the big book. And when I think about it and when I tell you that that's what I am, I refer you to the third chapter, to that very first sentence in the third chapter. Because that's what I am, and that's okay today. I'm going to tell y'all something. I'm never going to rag anybody about being a Sunday morning speaker. Ever again in my life. I know I'm not supposed to say never, but... Well, it's obvious. I have to tell y'all that I'm a fill-in, and that's okay, too, because this isn't my idea. It was Mel's. I'm still not sure who was supposed to be here before Mel and God decided that it was supposed to be me, but I tried to find Mary Nell yesterday before she started to get her to trade me places, and that didn't work either, so I don't know a lot about being a spiritual speaker. I do know that I've got a higher power today. That before this started, I went in to the bathroom and knelt down like I always do in front of that toilet because I spent a lot of time there on Sunday morning before I got here. And I asked him to just do what Aretha told me to do, and she said, just get self out of the way. And I used to pray that I would be able to get somebody sober. And my sponsor really came down on me for that. She said, no, she said, that's not what you're to pray for. So she taught me to pray that something I'm going to say today will just make you want to go to another meeting. Because then maybe if you keep doing that long enough, you'll learn to get sober and to live sober. It's been a crazy kind of a morning. I was in there in the coffee room and looked down and it was 2 minutes. And then I thought, oh my God, where's Jane? And I told John it's 8:50, and I tore out of that coffee room. And he came running after me. He said he didn't start till 9:30, so. How can you be excited and terrified at the same time? And wanting to, you know, I wanted to get it on. Now let's just get it on. Y'all got me down here. Now let's come on about it. And I was afraid Jane thought that I had already left for the airport because... I thought last night, you know, sometimes God answers our prayers and sometimes he doesn't, because I thought, now after Franklin talks, they're just going to decide to shut this down and let everybody get an early start on the way home. But I must need to do this. You all may not need to hear what I've got to say, but I must need to hear something that I'm going to say to you all today. And you already know that I get excited. We were sitting on the airplane. I'm going to get into this in a minute, but I got to tell you all this stuff. We were sitting on the airplane Thursday morning, and I was remembering where we were in this part of November 1982, and it wasn't fun, and it wasn't nice. I guess part of it was still exciting, but I just looked at John, and I started crying, and I haven't stopped since. You know, where else can you go and cry all weekend and go home on Monday and say, I had a wonderful time? And that's what we could do. Whoa. So, I'm going to try to get settled down now and just do what the big book tells me to do, and that's to share with you in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like today. And if I'm not careful, I'll tell you what it was like. Because that's a whole lot easier. I'm still not comfortable doing my part of my fifth step at the public level, but I want to be real sure that I take back with me more than I brought. And I know that that's going to happen. It already has happened. You know, whenever we go someplace and I meet new people, I think I'm never going to get to see them again. And then I go somewhere else, and there you all are. I got to see JT and Kitty. I just don't ever think I'm going to see you all. And now I've got a whole lot more people that I've met that maybe when we go to another roundup or another convention, I'll get to see you there. I met Billy Wayne last year in Mobile. Never thought I'd see him again. so I am taking back a whole lot more than I brought down here with me. Okay. I'm the second of five children. I've got four brothers, so being different wasn't anything new to me. I grew up knowing I was different. But I grew up also knowing, trying to be a part, in fact, trying to be just like those boys. Because they weren't interested in tea parties and dolls and dress up, and neither was I. So I got interested in fishing and hunting and playing football and playing baseball and climbing trees and jumping rope, and I felt like I had to do it better than they did to be accepted and to be a part of that. I had a real hard time when I got to this program with the Now. I don't know if anybody else did, but you see, I have a wonderful family. They're warm, they're loving, they're caring. I was told from the very first that I could do and be anything that I wanted to do and be. My mother and daddy loved me, and they gave me a Catholic education. And those nuns and those priests only wanted the very best for me. And when I came in, I heard a lot of people talking about being abused in their childhood and divorced parents and how bad the schools were. I didn't have any of that to blame this thing on, see? And I always thought you had to blame something. There had to be a reason for something. I didn't know it could be so simple that it was a disease and that I had it. But I knew the difference between right and wrong, and I think that was probably part of my big problem. I did know the difference between right and wrong, and I knew that I was not living the way that I had been taught by my mom and my daddy, and that I had not been taught by the principles of the Catholic religion. And maybe if I had been able to ignore all that, I might not be here today. I might still be out there doing it. But it got to the point where it just got too bad, and it just got too painful for me. It took a long time looking back on it, and if I'd known it was going to be this great, I guess I'd have drank a whole lot sooner and a whole lot more so that I could have gotten here quicker. But and that's another thing that I have. I don't do moderation at all. I mean, we got here Thursday, and I kept trying to figure the angle how we could just relocate here. If we had relocated every place we've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and that's really neat because that's where I have the most fun, and I just love everybody to death. But I kept thinking, oh, how can we move down here? You know, this is so wonderful. But that's all right. I mean, maybe I'll stay sober long enough to learn how to do moderation and how to be okay with that. Anyway, I went to Catholic high school and had a good time in high school. Studied hard. Wasn't a great student. I didn't study as hard as I could. And the people that I ran around with, I'm going to tell you all a few things that are going to be a little bit backwards today. But the people I ran around with didn't drink. So I didn't, you know, it wasn't any big deal. It wasn't a choice that I'm going to be a good girl or a bad girl. They just didn't drink. I did some pretty wild things before I ever took a drink, as a matter of fact. But and that's another thing that gets me when everybody tries to blame everything on being an alcoholic. I get tired with that. I really do. And I don't have a lot of tolerance about that. They want to blame their broken nail on, well, it's happened because I'm an alcoholic, I guess. You know, that I did a lot of stuff. I did a lot of stuff before I ever took that first drink, I'll just tell y'all. But, and then I'm going to turn around and tell you that the first time I got drunk, I was 14 years old. My talk is like that a lot. Doug and Beth know that. God love them. They're here from Louisville. And they stayed to hear me down here, too. I love you both. My older brother's 10 years older than I am, and he was married and had these children. They were going to have this big, fine dinner party one night. And they thought it would be okay for me to come and babysit the children, chaperone the children, because there were several families involved in this. And they thought, since I was getting ready to go into high school, that it was time I got a little sophistication about me. And I didn't have much then. I don't have a whole lot of that yet, but maybe that'll come too. But they thought it'd be okay if I had a drink with dinner, before dinner or whenever it was. And they were drinking gin bucks, and it was the summertime, and, you know, it was a good party. And what happened to me that night was to happen to me many, many times. I drank too much. I blacked out, passed out. I lied. I don't know how much I drank that night, but I don't remember a whole lot about that night. But I do remember waking up in the middle of the night being violently ill. And I never did learn to throw up quietly. So I was in there really, really being violently ill, and my brother came running down the hall and he said, "Peggy Jo, what is wrong with you?" And I knew what was wrong with me. I knew I had had too much to drink, but I also knew if I told him that I'd get a whipping, because back then there wasn't child abuse. We messed up and we got a whipping. It was that simple. And I didn't like that. I wasn't into that at that time either. And I knew I'd be grounded for the rest of my life, and I hadn't even started high school, so... Now, it didn't take me nearly as long to figure this out as it's taken me to tell you. I can tell you that, because what I said to him was, "Well, it must have been that blue cheese dressing." And you know, he believed it, and he bathed my face and held my head, and he said, "Well, for God's sake, don't ever eat it again." And I didn't until I was about 3 years sober. Because I convinced myself that I was, you know, blue cheese dressing. Now, if somebody had said that about alcohol, "Well, don't ever drink it again," I would have, you know, it never occurred to me not to ever drink again. I did think in that stupor, when I grow up and when I learn how to drink right, this won't happen to me. Because it didn't happen to the adults that I saw in my life drinking. I saw them get tipsy and I saw them, you know, but I never saw them doing what I was doing. And I just knew that I would have to learn how to do it right. Well, you know, I drank too much, I got sick, I lied. And that happened almost every time when I did start drinking 4 years later when I got out of high school. I don't have much of a drunkalog because you can only throw up so many different places and so many different times, and then it just gets kind of dumb. I don't know why I didn't figure that out before I got here, but I sure couldn't. But I never set out to be an alcoholic. That was not one of my dreams. You see, there was a lady that lived next door to us when I was a little girl, and I can remember my mother saying she was an alcoholic, and she would lay drunk for days, and she didn't take care of her family. I guess she was a binge drinker or a periodic, because when she was not drinking, she was so talented. She could cook, she could sew, she could paint. In late life, she took up the piano, and late life for me back then was 40 years old. But she took that up, and I mean, it just seemed she was really a neat, neat lady. But when she would get drunk, she would do bizarre things, and there would be strange men in and out of her house at strange hours of the day and night. And my mother and daddy said, "You cannot be over there when this is going on." And I saw these two children, boys being neglected, and also I knew I didn't want any part of that number. And that was another deal. When I got here, it was really hard for me to identify because I was a home drinker. I was a safe drinker, so I thought. And the only time I drank was when I was alone or with somebody. And when I was happy or when I was sad. And all those things made sense to me back then. But I went on and graduated from high school and got a good job and married a fellow from Bardstown, Kentucky, which is not far from Louisville, where I grew up. And we had two beautiful children and an alcoholic marriage. And I don't know who was more alcoholic, me or him, then none of that really matters. But that marriage did not last. It lasted for 7 years, and at the end of 7 years, we were done. And I did, at 26 years old, what normal kids do today. I guess they're normal. They run, and they dance, and they date, and they party. And I had these two children, and thank God I had my mother and daddy, because they took care of these two children. And they knew that with the kind of job I had, and it was real stressful, that I needed an outlet, and I needed to have a social life. They really didn't know the kind of social life I was having. But they took care of those children, and they were the stability and the security for those children that I couldn't be. I wanted to be that. I wanted to be a good mother. But I couldn't. I couldn't be the kind of mom my mother is. And I don't know if that helped make me an alcoholic or not. I don't think it did. I guess drinking like I drank made me an alcoholic. But I went ahead and I had this job and met this guy, and we started dating, and we were literally off to the races. Now, y'all, I guess most of you have heard of the Kentucky Derby. I just assume everybody has. Maybe you haven't, you know. But we got married on the Friday before Derby, and it was the 3rd of May, 1974. And for our honeymoon, we went to the Derby on Saturday. And I had never been, and it was the 100th running, and it was a lot of people. And I even got excited back then. And the way that happens is the first race that morning is like at 11 o'clock in the morning, and then there's a race every hour, and you go out there and you get dressed up and you go to this fine fancy box seat, and then by 5:15, 5:18 in the afternoon, that's when the Derby's run. Well, they said we're not going to go until about 2 o'clock. Well, that just about killed me because I'm always the first one there and the last one. I don't want to miss any of it. And that's really good because that's the way I try to do Alcoholics Anonymous. I was greedy when I drank, and I'm a greedy person in recovery. I want every bit of it. I don't want to miss any of it. But I said, well, they said, well, we'll have a party before we go. So we started that morning. Well, we really started the day before because I was drunk a couple of times the day we got married. I called it taking a nap a lot. And, you know, when John said, well, it didn't matter where I was, I'd just go sleep. I thought I was going to sleep a lot, you know, early. And then I'd wake up and we'd be right back at it. But on Saturday, we went to a nice brunch and everybody looked good and dressed up and went out to that racetrack and you get a bus and you go so you don't have to park. Well, you can, by 5:15 that afternoon, I was really excited. And if you've never been to the track, it's these wooden rails, and they're about this wide. And there's six seats in each one. Little fold-up chairs, no big deal. Well, I've never been real tall. And so when it came time to be run, I wound up on top of this rail, balanced, one foot here and one foot here. And I had this drink in my hand. And it gives me cold chills now to think of those horses coming around and all that pageantry and everything that goes on. And when they came around and I heard all that, I yelled and I squeezed my hand and that drink went all over these people in this next box. Well, it was lovely people from Lexington, Kentucky. And they didn't think I was cute. They didn't care that I was excited. They didn't care. And John, you know, we started apologizing, and John told them that we had just gotten married, and they didn't care about that either. We offered to buy, to clean the dress. We offered to clean the coat. We offered to buy a new dress and buy a new coat. But he wouldn't shut up, and he just kept mouthing about it. And then John started mouthing about it, and I started mouthing about it, and finally the security came, and they thought how it would probably be best if we left the premises. So we said so, too, after we said some more few choice words to these people. And you know, a couple of years ago, I talked at a picnic in Lexington one Sunday afternoon, and I thought, oh, my God, what if they're out there? You know, so I tried to make a public amend in case they were. But so by the time we got to get on the bus, walking around out there to get on the bus, I had that whole situation turned around that it wasn't my fault. If he'd have just shut his mouth, and if he'd have just let us do what we wanted to do to try to make that situation right, everything would have been okay. And that's always what I was able to do. I was always able to turn it around and not take the responsibility for what I had done and for the chaos I had caused and the insanity that was going on around me. I mean, it just couldn't have been my fault because I wasn't raised and brought up to do those kinds of things. Now, I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to get right on here. If y'all want to know more about blood and guts, you can see me afterwards. And I'll just tell y'all, one thing, Mel, I'm so glad you didn't ask me to do this in March like you did John, because I've had to tell myself to take deep breaths and to breathe when I think about doing this. But I've only had 2 weeks to think about it, and that's, I really do appreciate that. When she called, we had an 11:45 plane flight departure. Well, there wasn't any way. I said, well, I'm going to call him so we don't have to get out of here until 5:15, and that way I don't want to miss any hugs. I want to give us plenty of time. I didn't want to have to be running out the door. So if y'all want to know about blood and guts, like I said, we can talk about that later because I want to get to the good part. On November the 28th, I'll celebrate 8 years of recovery, 8 years of sobriety this year. So November's a real special month, and it's a time that I really reflect back, and you've given me that opportunity this morning and to be able to treat this disease. So in November of 1982, it was in the middle of the week, John said, do you want to go over to Nancy's? That's his little sister. She lives not far from us. And I said, sure, because by that time, we didn't take me very many places because we never knew what I was going to do. I mean, I really tried hard. I tried to learn how to drink right. You know, I'd do all these tricks and try to drink the same thing. Always eat, drink on a full stomach. It's a wonder I didn't weigh 600 pounds when I got here because I tried anything everybody would say. Nobody ever said. I didn't ever hear anybody say, other than him, why don't you just not drink? I mean, that just, like I said, never occurred to me. But anyway, we went over there. And he told you earlier yesterday that I drank my bourbon and my iced tea because I got tired of telling all those lies, and I knew I was telling lies. But that wasn't a whole lie, and that really was okay with me. See, that wasn't a whole lie. So I had my bourbon and iced tea, and we went out there to his sister's. And when we walked in, she said, do you want a drink? Well, they ask us the dumbest questions. Of course I wanted a drink. And I don't know about you, but I always fixed my own. There wasn't anybody going to be messing with mine. And I went in and I fixed a drink. And we went in and everything was lovely. My daughter was with us. And it was a nice afternoon, nice evening. And we were talking and it was just real okay. Then after I finished that drink, I went back out in the kitchen and she followed me. And I said, I want another drink, and I want to get drunk. And she said, well, there's the bottle. And I thought, where did that come from? Because I never told you I was going to get drunk, wanted to get drunk, or had been drunk. I would tell you that I got tight, and I got blitzed, and I got blamed, and I got smashed. But I never tell you I got drunk. That's not what, you know, young mothers, working mothers who had been raised in a good family in Catholic schools did. My goodness, I could never tell you that. And so she said, well, there's the bottle. So I fixed another drink, and we went on in, and we started talking. And all of a sudden, something happened to me physically. I knew up here what I wanted to say. I knew in my head what I wanted to say, but it wouldn't come out. And my tongue felt about this thick. I mean, it just, and I started seeing full of everything. Now, I had heard of double vision, and I'm a grandiose kind of alcoholic, I guess, because I saw four of everything. And I thought, oh, man, I am really doing it this time. And I looked over, and I saw that look on John's face that I had seen so many times before. And it really scared me. And one of him got up to take me home. And we went home. And I really prayed that night. And for a long time, I thought God didn't answer my prayers again. Because what I prayed was, don't let him be at me. Because we would always, right after I got my head out of the toilet, we would always want to talk about what we were going to do and why I did these things and why couldn't I behave and what we were going to do with the rest of our life. And we were going to solve that. We had to have that conversation and solve it right that minute. You may have been a better alcoholic than I was. I was never at my sharpest mental abilities at that particular point of time. The next afternoon, I could think of, oh man, I could come back at 2:00. I could think, well, why didn't I say this to him? And I could really think up some good zingers. But at that particular time, I never could. And I used to think, God, he is so smart. You know, he is so brilliant. Why can't I live up to that? Why can't I compete with that? So that night I really prayed, and I got home, and Tracy went to her room, and I went down the hall and got in the bedroom and turned off the light and got in bed. And I prayed, God, don't let him be at me. Well, he comes in and flips on the light and says those famous words, don't you think we ought to talk? And I reared up in the bed. And I don't know about you all either, but God, it was hard work. It was hard work being drunk. It was hard work to be an alcoholic. I heard a kid in the meeting the other night say, it's so hard to be sober. It's just really hard to be sober. And I'm thinking, the hardest work I ever did was when I was drunk. Trying to remember the lies, trying to repair the damage, trying to shoot that blame off. That's the hardest work I ever did. And I remember that night raring up and going, Talk about what? And you try to be so straight, and all you want to do is just either lay down and throw up and just let me alone, you know, but I tried to straighten up and talk about what, you know, and I'm wiggling, wallering back and forth. And he says, about the way we're living. And I thought, man, why don't we just put this on a video tape, you know, on a cassette recorder. Now we got the VCR. We could tape this whole thing, go in and plug it in, and everybody could go to bed. Because it was the same thing. I kept trying to do it right. And I kept thinking, surely to God, somebody will be able to teach me. But I started crying, and that usually worked. He'd tell me not to cry. But that night he let me cry, and I thought, what is this? There was a real change in that room that night. Now, he says that we made our first meeting together. I'm going to tell y'all some things, and you can make up your own mind if he was sneaking to Al-Anon or not. There's a couple of things about yesterday that I really do need to clear up. And one of them was about those oysters. And now I know this is supposed to be spiritual, but it's not my fault. Here again, you see, when we came back from dinner that night, we had been for a nice walk on the beach, and that was just so wonderful. And as we were coming in, here were these two sweet little old ladies, Ruth and Juanita, going, trying to get in their room, which is next to ours. And they're flying this red negligee thing with little bitty bikini pants with black lace on it. I mean, and I'm just going, oh, my gosh, what is this? You know, now I don't think it was the oysters. I think it was that red thing. They were flying around, and they were trying to get him to wear it. And I thought, now, didn't you all think they were nice little innocent old ladies? So that wasn't the oysters Thursday night. But, and another thing, I love it when you alcoholics told me when we first came here that he was sicker than I was. Oh, I loved that. That was such a relief. And when we got off the plane Thursday and Mel said to him, John, you know, we'll go to a meeting and all, and he's saying, yeah, and I said, okay, that's fine. Well, I went up to the room, and I looked out, and I saw that view, and that door slammed, and I started jerking clothes off and snatching that bathing suit, and I got down on that beach on a towel, and I guess this is the AA brat that's still in me. But I looked up and I thought, they still are sicker than we are. Here I am on this beach with this sun and this sand and this surf, and they're in a room with some other people talking about this disease. I really do know the true meaning of that. I'm learning that more and more. But it's so neat to be able to laugh about all this, because we couldn't. We couldn't in November of 82. We couldn't laugh and we couldn't love. And you wouldn't ask us to come back anywhere. Anyway, that night we went home and I did all this. And he said, I said, why can't I drink like everybody else? See, I was still trying to learn how to drink 20 years later. Still trying to learn how to drink right. He said, I don't know, but it doesn't have to stay this way. Now, he had been in the healthcare field. And he called this gal, and I knew her. And we partied with her, and we drank. But I didn't know anything about alcoholism. He handed me the phone. We said something, I don't know what, I cried. And I made arrangements to meet her for lunch. And we've got a Fridays up there. It's pretty good watering hole. I had done some drinking in there, and so that was okay, pretty safe. And she met me there on a Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving, as a matter of fact. And we had lunch, and I got there early, like I always do, and the waitress came over and asked me if I cared for something to drink. And I thought, well, I better wait to see what she's going to do, because I had a beer before I left home. I didn't know what this deal was going to be about. And so when she came in and ordered coffee, I almost choked, because I was not a big coffee drinker at that time. But I guess wanting to go along with the flow here, I ordered iced tea, and we talked, and she started talking about the disease of alcoholism. And I said, oh, Betty, I said, you surely don't think I'm an alcoholic. And she said, I can't say that about another human being. You have to make your own mind up. And I said, well, the only problem is when I drink, John goes crazy. Now, I really don't set out to do these kinds of things that happen to me when I drink. I really don't. She said, and she started talking to me about her daughter who was in recovery, and she started talking about this Al-Anon deal. And she said, maybe you ought to give it a try. And I said, oh, well, I just don't know about that. And she said, maybe. Now, do you know how, I know how it is now when we got a live one and you just kind of want to get in there and you're not going to let them go and you want to just, and she was doing that to me. And she said, would you like to go to a meeting tonight? And I said, oh, Betty, we're not clubbers. We're not joiners. No, 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 I'm so busy. And I said, what kind of a meeting? And she said, Alcoholics Anonymous. But I said, oh, no, 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 I couldn't do that because, you see, we didn't take me very many places back then, and I knew that that wouldn't be something that was up his alley. So, but finally I said to her, I got to get out of this lunch. You know, she was wearing me out. And I finally said, well, I'll call you. I'll see what he wants to do, and I'll call you. So I went on and went home. And a real miracle happened then, because at 4 o'clock that afternoon, John came in, and he didn't come home early a lot either, but he came in, and he was smiling, and he said, well, how was your lunch? And I said, oh, it was weird. I said, she's talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous and all this, and she wants us to go to a meeting tonight. He said, oh, what time and where? And I looked at him, and I said, well, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And he said, well, I can't say that about another human being. Was he sneaking or not? He may not have been to a meeting, but he was getting at back door or shotgun or something somehow. I'm telling you what. So I was delighted to get to go out on Friday night. Now, I'm just telling you. And we went and picked her up, and we went to this church, and it walked in through this kitchen, and I saw the biggest coffee pots I had ever seen in my life. I never dreamed. And I saw all these cookies, and I thought, I'm 38 years old. What is this on Friday night, coffee and cookies? I mean, that was not my idea of a good time. What is this deal? And then I looked around, and I thought, well, where's all these alcoholics they said were going to be here? Because I didn't see anybody that looked like an alcoholic. I saw you, and I saw how good you were, and how clean you were, and I knew I wasn't like that, and I knew if you had seen inside of me, you wouldn't let me come in there. I'm having a good time. So this guy talked, and he shared, and he was a psychologist and something, and everybody laughed. And I couldn't laugh because I didn't think it was funny. And I told him so afterwards. You know, all these people got up, and they read out this big book, and I thought, 12 steps, 12 traditions. Where's that in the Bible? But see, Catholics aren't big on the Bible, and I hadn't read it. I knew 10 commandments. I knew the 8 Beatitudes. I knew the 7 deadly sins. I had heard something about 12 tribes somewhere, but I thought, I haven't read the whole Bible. It must be in there somewhere. And then at the end of the meeting, if is this your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, we'd like to know your name to get to know you better after, you know, we close this thing. And I thought, if I was an alcoholic, which I was not that night, I'm just here to tell you. If I was one, I certainly wouldn't be telling everybody. Because everybody that came up, you know, they said, hi, I'm Joe, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm John, and I'm an alcoholic. I thought, my God, you don't tell people those kinds of things. And if I was one, I wasn't going to tell you. And I didn't. And y'all prayed. And I thought, man, this is weird. And see, back then, Hare Krishna was getting a lot of press and a lot of publicity, all these cults. And I saw all these people hugging, and I knew they weren't all married to each other. And they came up to us afterwards, and they shoved this literature at us and said, why don't, will you please come back? Now, John had a spiritual experience that night. I didn't. Because I thought it was real weird. And but took that literature home, and on the way home, John said, did you feel love in that room? Now, we didn't talk about love at all. And I said, yeah, but they want something. I said, you can bet they want something. I said, they're not just there. I said, maybe they don't have any place else to be, buddy, but I said, that's just too weird. I said, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And he said, I can't say that about another human being. So we went home and I had a drink. I really needed a drink after that. And I sat on the other couch and I was reading these 12 questions. And you know what? I don't think sometimes we overlook our literature. And that was real important to me. And it's been real important to me, especially when I have stayed around long enough to get involved in service and to know that it just there's not a literature tree out there. And I really appreciate that my area has seen fit to make me a trusted servant. And I just hope, if you're not, you know, not everybody is for service, that's what they say. I don't believe it either, because you can at least support the people who are in service. You can listen to the minutes. You can show some interest. You can help finance what they need to do to go to the area to take your voice to New York. New York's there to serve us. And I got that experience several years ago when I went to the Southeast Forum down in Montgomery, Alabama, because I thought we were out here working it all, making it happen for them. No, that's not. They're there. They want to know your concerns. They want to know what you need in this program to strengthen this program and to keep it strong and to keep it available for the next one that walks through that door. So I took this 12 questions deal. And I sat there and I answered them, and I answered 9 out of 12 right. I answered yes to them. And see, I had that little bit of honesty even then, even in all that mess that I was in, emotionally and spiritually and all that, I had a little glimmer of honesty. And I answered 9 of them yes. And then John had been with me in almost all my drinking. And I did not notice that he had quit, by the way. That was right in here. That was accurate in his story yesterday. But I said, all right, you answer these for me. So I went through them all, and we got to one, and I had said no. And he said, yes, you did. You were in a blackout. Now, do you think if you go out on this street and you talk to somebody about something that, you know, that you think they can come right back to you and say, well, that was a blackout, and not have been to Al-Anon or something? So here again, I thought, gee, he really is smart, isn't he? And so I erased that because I remembered pieces of it when he started telling me. So I had gotten 10 out of 12, and I said, well, it looks like I passed this thing. What are we going to do now? He said, well, I don't know. And we went on and just went to bed. And then Saturday and Sunday, it was like Friday hadn't happened. I mean, it was weird. We did not talk about one thing that happened on Friday. And I began to wonder, did that really happen on me on Friday? Did we go do that? You know, because he had me convinced I was crazy with some of the stuff that had been going on in our life. So I thought, well, I'm just going to let this alone. And Sunday night's phone rang. It was one of those gals that I had met. And she said, she had introduced me to her fiancé. And she said, he goes to a Monday night meeting and he'll meet you at this ice cream factory at 6 o'clock. The meeting's at 6. And I'm going, wait a minute. Huh. See, I told you they were strange acting on Friday night, loving on each other and everything. And I thought, man, that might be all right with you, but that ain't going to work here. Because we were like almost at the hip with each other, where it was like he had to be kind of trailing after me to make sure that everything was all right. It was his job, for goodness sake. He was the man of the house. And I had to get his permission to do everything and his approval to do everything. And I really tried to do that. But I hung the phone up and I told him who it was and what she wanted, and he said, well, that's a good idea. I said, well, you know, I can't get home from work. I get off at 5 o'clock. I can't get home from work and fix dinner and be back down there at 6. He said, well, just go from work. So I, okay. So I went over there and I got in and everybody was laid back and drinking coffee and drinking Cokes and laughing and having a good time, and I thought, well, this isn't half bad. I'd be home rattling those pots and pans, figuring out what I was going to do for dinner, trying to help with homework, getting laundry started, and I'm going, this is all right. So I got me a Coke, and I sat down, and they asked if it was anybody's first meeting, and it wasn't mine, because I'd been to my first meeting on Friday night. And I was not an alcoholic that night either. And they talked about anger and what to do with it and all, and I thought, well, when are they going to talk about drinking? If they keep talking about this stuff, I'm not going to learn how to do this. So I went home that night immediately as soon as the meeting was over. I got out of there and I went home and I told John, I said, you know, I said, this is really weird. They want me to come back there tomorrow night. But I said, they didn't talk about drinking, they talked about anger. I said, I guess I'm going to have to go back there tomorrow night and they can teach me how to drink right. Because they've got all the experience in the world. And he said, well, I don't think that's what they're about, but if you want to, you know, he said, you go right ahead. And so I went back that night and they were talking about other stuff, and somehow that night I heard, let go and let John. And I thought, I can do that. I I can do that. This is his idea for me to be coming to these meetings. So I can do that. So I went home, and that Wednesday night was my daughter's birthday, and Thursday night we went somewhere, and then Friday night we looked in this little book, and there was this beginner's meetings. I thought, good, this is it. We can go here and get this alcoholism 101. I can go to 8 or 9 of these tricks that they've got, and I can be out. I can learn how to drink right, and he's going to be happy, and we'll just be, that'll be all right. So we went to that beginner's meeting, and see, until then, I had never opened my mouth in a meeting, but there was only about 8 people, and they all introduced themselves, and here again, they were telling everybody they were alcoholics, and it got to me, and I said, well, I'm a potential alcoholic, and I'm really grateful, because they didn't tell me to go out until I became a real one. I didn't have any idea that I was already a real one and that I might not get back there. But they said, well, that's okay. So they started talking, and it was a good meeting, and they said, stay for the 8 o'clock meeting. So I said, okay. So we stayed for that, and I was out in the middle of the room with some guys, and they were talking to me about 90 meetings, 90 days, and I told them explicitly what they could do with that. And y'all don't know what an effort it is, an effort I have made to clean my mouth up. And I really feel good about that today. It's not always there, but I try to do that from the podium because I really do want to be a lady. My mom used to say, when are you going to be a lady? And the first time that I got the opportunity to share from the podium in May of 1983, that morning I got there early and the phone rang at the club and this black guy came over and he said, Peggy, you've got to answer this phone. He said, it's some woman and she wants to talk to a lady. Who would ever dream that it would have taken me to come to a room full of drunks to be called a lady? I'm telling you what, if you all don't believe in miracles, just keep coming. Just keep coming back because they will happen for you. But anyway, we started on this adventure. We started on this adventure, and that night, that Friday night back there early, this guy after the meeting was telling John, like he said, to get the big book and go to 90 meetings in 90 days and get a sponsor, and I needed to go down with those little ladies back there. They'd help me along with this, and I loved it. I loved it. He couldn't tell which one of us it was. And finally, John was doing this, you know, and finally, I just looked up, and I just went like that, and he dropped John like dirt and shoved him down the hall, and told me, and we started, and he started reading me page 449 out of the big book, and I love that old guy today. But we've had a rugged journey at times in here. My son's out there now, and I know that the whole deal with him is that I'm okay with is that he does know where recovery is, and he does know how to live, and that people can live without drinking and drugging today. And you all helped me show him that. I don't recommend making 12-step call on your old child, but at least it's a basis for them to start. See, I got real wrapped up in his recovery when he came in, and John's niece came in at about the same time, and they had 4, 5, 6 months of real good full recovery. But they both went back out within about a week. And I was real upset about that, and I was ready. You know, I told John that night, we were going to a meeting, and I said, I'm going to call Vanessa, and I'm going to call Jana, and I'm going to cut them loose. They need another sponsor. Can't do it anymore. Because I felt like I had failed those two young people, and as is so often that we've been able to do, he said, who's sober? He said, Jan and Vanessa are sober. And he said, but more importantly, you're still sober. And he said, if somebody had to go back out, I'm glad it's them and not you. And I really am too. Because like Billy Wayne said this morning, if I had settled for what I was willing to settle for when I came here and got a little taste of it, I would have missed it all. I would have missed all of you. I would have missed the spirituality that I've been able to really be blessed with. Let me tell you, I don't know where you are in your recovery. I was at 5 years before I could get on my knees. And I heard them all say that, but I had a chair, and I went to that same chair every morning, and I did that prayer and meditation. But at 5 years, I thought, I want more. So I started getting down on my knees. You see, what kept me from that was I didn't want John to see me play. It's really special. More special treasures. But when he called me that next day and wanted this, I said no. And he said, I guess you think if those Al-Anon people are telling you that they'd be enabling me. He said, I'm not asking to go to college, for God's sake, Mother. I just want $200 to get out of here. But I was able to not do that, and I was able to tell him why. I said, I love you enough, Tony, to let you hit rock bottom. And I'm not going to help you kill yourself. You may do it. You may do it. And it's real. It's a real possibility. But I'm not going to help you do it. Maybe one day he'll understand that. I hope so. Don't let anything happen to you all. Please, keep coming back. Stay around here even when it does get tough. He might be the one to walk through that door, and you might be the very one to help him. And I might walk through that door in a lot of pain, and you may be the very one to say something to make me want to live one more day sober. I've got a real good shot at being sober today. I don't know if this is November the 11th or the 12th. I think it's the 11th, because when I read the thing this morning in that new meditation book, it said, talked about self-acceptance. I don't know about tomorrow. I know one thing, I plan by God to celebrate my 8-year sobriety date on November the 28th. And if you all are in Louisville, on the 25th, it said we're going to have the celebration at the Shively Group of Alcoholics Anonymous at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. And I'm going to celebrate with Bob Wessel. And he's got 28 years. So I run with some hardcore people. And that's okay. That's what I need to run with. And I plan to be sober. And I don't think there's anything wrong with planning to be sober. I know we're not supposed to project and do all that business, but I'm going to plan to be sober because I really like being sober. Nobody's been able to tell me there's anything wrong with being sober. And that's what, you know, I can remember when John said, Jesus, is there life after Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, is this all we're going to do for the rest of our life? And I said, oh no, we're not going to get that involved. No, we'll just go to a few of these meetings here and there. Now we're going to have an outside life. Now let me tell you something where I am. I know I can come in here and I can talk good program. God gave me a real gift with that. And I can read that book and I can go to that book and study it with you and I can talk it to death if I'm not careful. My whole thing is, how do I react out there? What am I doing when they don't act the way I want them to do at my workplace? Am I going crazy? Am I trying to manipulate? Well, sometimes I still try to do that. I have to tell you that. But it's not in a way that I'm paralyzed by it, you know, and I'm all consumed with it. I know I'm sober when I'm walking sober with my family, when I am walking sober in the workplace and not going off like a wild woman like I used to do. And I know I'm walking sober when that phone rings at 2 o'clock in the morning and I don't say, I'm too damn tired to talk to you. Call me back in the morning. That's when I know I'm walking sober, you all. And I'm convinced anybody can talk it. It's another dimension to be able to walk it. And I know that my sponsorship and my service has helped me get to that extra dimension there. I really have had a good time. It has been a beautiful weekend. And I'll just volunteer to be a fill-in anytime anybody can use it. If y'all are in Louisville, it's John Chumley on Burnsdale Road. Give us a call. We've got good Al-Anon and good AA up there. I hope I see each and every one of you again. You know what? I prayed for you all on Thursday before I left because I asked God to let everybody get here safe and to get them back safe, and I already prayed for you. I hope you'll say a prayer for me. I'm Peg Chumley, and I'm a real alcoholic.